Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and happy week 13 in the NFL, everyone. This is Doug Farrar of Touchdown Wire and the USA Today Sports Media Group. And the guy right there in the Amherst basketball sweatshirt, he's telling us he had the best jump shot you've ever seen.
You know, just a one man's point of view.
Yeah, Greg Cosell of NFL Films and ESPN's NFL Matchup, and apparently the NBA. So you were a basketball.
I was a basketball and baseball player.
Yeah, you didn't.
I grew up in Queens, in New York, and my high school did not have a football team, so I played basketball and baseball.
And then you got into football, and that worked out pretty well for you.
I did, yeah. And got the job at NFL Films in 1979, and have been here ever since.
That's amazing. Are you the longest tenured guy? I would imagine
I am. I'm actually the second longest tenured employee in the entire NFL.
Well, let's use all that expertise gained over all those years to talk about Week 13 in the NFL. And Greg, Thursday night is, we're not messing around, Seattle Seahawks and Dallas Cowboys. And before let's talk about the Seahawks offense. And this week, Pete Carroll, OC Shane Waldron, and Geno Smith all said he needs to get the ball out faster. There's a lot to unpack here, but the Seahawks have seven touchdowns, seven interceptions, and 11 personnel this year. Three touchdowns and no interceptions in 12, two tight ends instead of one. Much better in 12, 274 attempts in 11, 62 attempts in 12s. Geno Smith has a 119.9 passer rating in 12, 79.6 passer rating in 11. And everyone involved is kind of saying he needs to get the ball out quicker. And what I think they mean by that, and I want to get your take on this, is that in 11, those interceptions, you watch him and he seems to be hitting his receivers late where the defenders can jump on that. It happened a lot. It happened on the Ambry Thomas interception on Thanksgiving. So just when you watch the Seattle passing game right now and I don't want to call it a schism, but the move to more 11 with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, you get him in the first round. You've got DK Metcalf, you've got Tyler Lockett. So obviously you're going to run more 11. That's what you've set up for. But what are you seeing from Seattle's passing game?
Well, I think you have different concepts. See, that's the thing. We know that last year they played a ton out of 12 personnel, and you had certain concepts you ran. They did a ton of boot action. They did a ton of throws. Let's put it this way. And again, none of this is 100%, so I don't want people to think that anything is 100%, Doug, because it's not, as you know. But I just don't want people to think that anything I'm saying means it's 100% of the time. But you get a lot more throws that were one read or no read throws in their 12 personnel passing game. Mm-hmm. You saw a lot of that a year ago. So therefore, there's no reading per se. So he doesn't have to wait to see what happens. I can't tell you how many times last year, and I did a number of pieces last year on the matchup show on boot action, where he either got the ball quickly into the flat to, let's say, Noah Fant, and because of the run action and the defensive response, Fan would be able to run for 25 yards, and it would be a quote-unquote explosive pass play on what's essentially a no-read throw.
Yeah.
And they did a ton of that out of 12. Now, when you go to 11 personnel, which they almost are forced to because of where they drafted Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and by the way, he's a very talented player.
Oh, yeah, he's a great player.
Yeah, he's a really good player.
And that trio is like, wow, that's a lot.
All your formations end up being different, okay, because now – you know, Smith-Njigba, who's essentially the slot, not 100%, but essentially, because Lockett can line up there as well.
And Shane Waldron has said for years, I want my guys to be sort of interchangeable.
Right. You know, Metcalf is going to be predominantly be your outside receiver. He's their boundary X for the most part. So now the way your receiver distribution and location, and I did that for you, your receiver distribution and location is different, and it creates – more reading is involved when you have an 11 personnel passing game. The boot action pass game is not the same. You don't do that as much. You don't do certain things that were essentially no read or one read concepts. Now you have to read more. And I think they're making a transition, and they're making the transition in the middle of the season, and that's hard to do. But, you know, Smith Njigba obviously got hurt in the preseason, missed most of it, didn't play much early in the season, so they stayed with 12. But over the last 2-3 weeks, it's pretty clear that they're evolving into much more an 11 personnel offense, and now that puts a different burden on Geno Smith. We don't want to say he can't do it, Doug. I don't want to go there. I know the numbers say, oh, he's not doing well, but it hasn't been a large enough sample size. They're making a transition in season.
Right.
You know, and they don't get – they didn't get the mini bye because they're playing Thursday night, and they played last Thursday, so they didn't get the extra time where maybe they could have done more work with it. So the game Thursday night is going to be fascinating against an incredibly dynamic defense. I mean, that is a really difficult defense to play against.
Well, the 0-1 read thing that you brought up, and I wrote an article about this that went up this morning, and I used another one of your terms that I think Geno's struggling with a little bit, elimination and isolation.
Yeah, because there's more involved. So now he has to see it quicker and then get it out quicker, because obviously if you're beat late in the NFL, fractions matter in the NFL. And if you're beat late in the NFL, you're late. And that can, you know, that can pose problems just as far as incompletions. Obviously, it's not as if he's throwing a ton of interceptions, but, you know, it just incompletions are the result. And he has to, you know, he has to work through that as well, because he hasn't been doing as much of that as a foundation of the pass game over the last year. So he has to work through all that as well.
Well, and this is the Niners, not a good team to work out your 11 personnel reps. They have the most interceptions against 11, 13 of any team in the league. And the Cowboys have the lowest passer rating allowed of 72.6. When you play a lot of dime, that happens. But when you play a lot of dime, you may be a little more vulnerable to those multiple tight end looks. And that's where they have a passer rating of 97.6.
Well, they won't play dime. I mean, if they're going to play 12 and 13 personnel, the Cowboys won't play dime. They'll play big nickel. That's their base defense. They rarely ever play what we normally consider base defense. They play big nickel to 12 and 13 personnel, particularly on early downs or normal down and distance situations. But their pass rush and the way they use their players up front, they're as multiple as any team in the league with their defensive fronts. They move everybody around. Yep. You know, everybody focuses on Parsons for good reason. He's the most dynamic pass rusher in the league in terms just of velocity and twitch. We can debate who's the best pass rusher. That may be a different question. But he is the most explosive and sudden just in his movements. But they also have other players who move around a lot. Lawrence, Armstrong. I mean, Sam Williams can line up inside and outside. They do a lot with Clark, number 33, the linebacker. He lines up on the ball, off the ball. You know, they move people around so much, and they're really dynamic. And, boy, do they look fast on tape. So this is a challenge in a different way, in an added way, not a different way, an added way to the challenge that Geno has. But the one thing that could theoretically could help is the Cowboys also play the highest percentage of man coverage in the NFL, and that makes the reading process easier because you're not working through zone concepts as to the timing and anticipation, what window to throw it through, at what time. So theoretically, that could make it a little bit easier.
Yeah, that's a Dan Quinn thing. I remember when he was Seattle's DC, and I would be talking to Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett about how Dan like mixed up his players in the fronts, and Bennett told me, yeah, he's just an animal. He's crazy about how he'll put things together. Moving to the Cowboys passing game, oh my goodness, sometimes a bye really helps, Greg. Before their Week 7 bye, Dak Prescott had completed 132 of 190 passes for 1,333 yards, 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and a pass rating of 91.0. Since the Week 7 bye, 127 of 180 for 1,602 yards, 17 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a pass rating of 124.8. And his completion percentage on deep balls is just insane. So I went through like just kind of the study since the bye. There's more play action, there's more motion, more full field concepts that Dak can exploit because he's such a good diagnostician of defenses. And I don't think we talk about that with him enough. And I know in the NFL, when you talk to people in the NFL, yeah, Dak is as good as anyone at that. But and I know we talked about this play yesterday. 35-yard pass to tight end Jake Ferguson against the Commanders was one example. Cowboys had first and 15 at their own 5-yard line. So as a quarterback, you better have faith in a deep seam ball. And
are you talking about the 35-yarder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Prescott said attack tempo play, knowing we would catch them off guard, caught him in cover two. They weren't quite right. The safeties, Curl and Butler, got wide and then tried to, you know, compress it again. And he just had the thing read the whole way. So
yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they knew by their formation that they were going to get that, because they were in empty, but it was 4x1, not 3x2. So they were in quads. They were in a 4x1 set. So it wouldn't surprise me if they knew based on film study that in response to that, because you don't see a lot of 4x1, that they knew that the Commanders would default to cover two, and that he knew that even pre-snap. That would be my guess. You know, I don't know that for certain, but that would be my guess, Doug. And therefore, he just had to confirm that as soon as he took the snap, but he didn't have to reread it. I feel pretty strongly that they knew they would get that coverage based on the formation, which, as I said, was 4x1, which is quads. And you don't see that very often in the NFL.
Right. But just the way he's, you know, the way the whole thing is working right now is I don't think I've seen Dak play.
Yeah. And also Lamb, they've used him more, you know, he's lining up much more outside, including significant snaps at boundary X.
Okay.
Whereas last year he was predominantly a slot receiver. So, you know, with the new staff and Brian Schottenheimer is there now, you know, they've clearly made a decision to move Lamb around far more than the previous staff, and it's been very successful.
Mm-hmm. The thing that Prescott said about the Ferguson play, confidence in that guy, confidence in that the guy to go make plays across the middle. And I think that's what you're watching in Prescott right now. And you can kind of tell when you watch a quarterback who's playing with confidence and he's got like everything is there. And
no question. You can see it the way he drops back and delivers the football.
Yep.
But I, you know, all we were told a year ago is that he's an interception machine, Doug. So what, you know, why are we even discussing this?
Well, we don't want to watch the conclusion on that. No, we don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, here's an interesting game that we didn't think would be interesting a few weeks ago. The Denver Broncos, who have a 5-game winning streak, oh my gosh, against the Houston Texans. And in that 5-game winning streak, the Broncos have the NFL's second best opponent pass rating allowed, 72.2, behind only the Indianapolis Colts. Go figure. We've mentioned the addition of quarterback Fabian Moreau replacing Damari Mathis as a positive. And Jaquan McMillan, who we touched on briefly last week or a couple weeks ago, second-year undrafted free agent from East Carolina, go Pirates. Very pleasant surprise. Good match and carry slot defender who can stay sticky through his routes. I liked his interception against the Vikings. Had him working with Pat Surtain on a switch release, and he played it well. Jumped it to the pass to Brandon Powell. It doesn't look like a big deal on tape. You know, it's like, oh, my God, what an amazing play. But you see these guys playing much more in concert on defense than in the first few weeks they're just getting blown out by everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I think McMillan has been a major factor. He's really been a good slot corner for them, and it's settled them there because obviously they started the season, they weren't comfortable with who their slot corner was. So he's really settled that. You know, they've got three young guys as part of their pass rush group in Browning, Benito, and Cooper, and they're all pretty explosive athletes. You know, particularly Browning and Benito. I mean, Benito, I did him coming out of Oklahoma, and I really liked his tape a lot. I thought he could be a really good edge rusher. They've used him a lot to spy as well. They've played teams in this 5-game stretch. He spied versus Mahomes. He spied versus Allen. That's clearly part of what they do. You know, Singleton is a guy who plays literally every snap and linebacker, and he flies around the field. I mean, he makes a lot of plays. And they've got a veteran safety in Simmons, who's a very, very good player. So they've actually got good players on defense. You know, I like what they do in their sub packages with that pass rush. It's those three studs plus Zach Allen, who's a very good player. So, you know, it's, I think it was a matter early on. They had a new coordinator in Vance Joseph, who's been in the league for a lot of years. It's not his first rodeo. And they probably needed to figure some things out with what he had because these, you know, some of these guys are young players. So you got to figure all this out. They didn't have a slot corner. They didn't know about Cooper, Browning, and Benito. I mean, these are things that as the season progresses, you figure out. Now, the turnovers, you know, I never know what to make of turnovers. You can't count on that.
Right.
But they're playing solid defense, and they've got – the best corner in the game in Patrick Surtain. So, you know, that helps too.
Yeah, it's good if you have that. I haven't watched the Broncos offense a lot, so just kind of thumbnail what has been your impression during this streak. And because we have
they've turned to a running game, basically. It's not really a Russell Wilson offense. They run the football. And it's interesting that they do that, because I think Sean Payton is telling you what their offense is. You know, I mean, obviously Russell Wilson with his history, people think, oh, it's Russell Wilson, you know, he's the guy, but that's not the way they're playing offense. In fact, over the last 4 or 5 games, they have clearly been a running football team and not a passing football team.
Yeah. Coaches will tell you what they think by how they,
that is correct.
That's something you told me years ago. Okay, let's get into this one. Niners and Eagles, here we go. And before we get into this matchup specifically, Brian Johnson of the Eagles and Kyle Shanahan of the 49ers, two of the best at this. This is more of a general discussion, which we always like to do. When we talk about an offensive coordinator setting plays up for other plays or thinking 6 plays ahead, like, oh, he's using, you know, chess, not checkers. What do we mean by that? What, you know, using the sequential play calling, what does that actually mean?
Well, What good? I think Kyle Shanahan's among the best in the league at this. I think what good coordinators do is they see the game as a process, not as a series of just individual plays. So through the use of personnel, formations. Now with the Niners, it's mostly formation because personnel in normal down and distance, they're heavy 21 personnel, which not a lot of teams are. So they play with a fullback, Kyle Juszczyk, in normal down and distance a very high percentage of the time. But what Kyle Shanahan does, he goes through a process early in the game. He's so diverse formationally at a 21 personnel and with his use of different motions that he wants to see how a defense reacts to all that. Okay, and then there's people upstairs in the booth charting all that. And then they let him know, okay, hey, coach, every time we line up in this particular formation, let's say they do it 3 or 4 times through their first 2 series. Hey, we've gotten the same look from the defense every time. So now Kyle Shanahan banks that, and he knows that, hey, maybe in the 3rd quarter in a critical high leverage situation, he knows what the defensive reaction will be when he lines up in that formation. So that's what, you know, I believe that's what good coordinators do, is they glean information based on their use of personnel, their use of formations, their use of motions. They're looking to see what the defensive reaction will be. Because keep in mind, on both sides of the ball, really, there's not 1,000 things that you can ask people to do. They can't play that way. So, you know, when a team goes against the Niners with all the formation diversity and motions, they're not going to have 25 different responses because the players can't handle that. So, and it's not, and again, I don't want people to think I'm saying players are stupid. It's just that's too much material in too short a period of time. So now maybe they handle it in 2 or 3 ways at most. And I always come back to Rod Rust, as you know, sat with me for 5 years, and he started out his career as a defensive coach, which he was in the NFL as well, and a highly respected one. And he said, man, when I started out coaching, I wanted to, you know, show that I knew a lot, and I tell my defense, hey, when we get this look, we're going to do this. When we get this look, we're going to do this. When we get this look, we're going to do this. And then he said, I realized I was being ridiculous. The players can't do that. They can't have 20 different things they're going to do in response.
It just happened too quickly for you to do
that. Yeah, it happens too quick. So defenses have specific responses, and offenses try to figure that out through the use of personnel, formation, and motion. And then they learn. They're investigating. They're researching. And then as the game goes on, they know how the defense reacts. I mean, a great example, and this they know because they play Seattle a lot, and they also know this player's been in the league a long time. But against Seattle in the last game that they played, they did an unbelievable job of actually causing confusion for Wagner, Bobby Wagner, who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer and a great player and as smart as they come. But if you watch that tape, you saw they did a number of things, and Wagner, his eye discipline was off. He wasn't seeing it with the speed and clarity that he normally sees it because of what the Niners do.
And if you can fool Bobby Wagner, you're on to something, that's for sure. Okay, Eagles-Niners. Eagles point differential in the first half of the season, -4. Eagles point differential in the second half and in overtime, +68. They've trailed at the half in each of their last 4 games. They've won them all, tied for the longest streak since at least 2000 per ESPN. Hurts has been – I don't want to recite stats for 5 minutes. Hurts has been much better in the second half and overtime than in the first half. And to try and make more of a simplistic question, why has the Eagles offense been a slow starter this season?
That's a hard question to answer.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being honest. I really don't have a specific answer to that. You know, obviously they game plan and they feel that what's going to happen early is going to be good. And it has.
Well, let's break it down to this. Against the Bills in the first half, he was 4 of 11 for 33 yards and an interception that was tipped. In the second half, 14 of 20 for 167 and 3 touchdowns. So let's break it down to the Bills game. Let's go a little macro. Like, what did you see differently?
But then I think you have to look at specific plays. I mean, you know, I would say that Jalen Hurts this year, more so than last year, and again, I can't tell you why, but I would say more so than last year, Hurts has been a little quick to leave the pocket. So okay. I think there's throws he leaves on the field. Now, he can make great runs. We know that. But I think he's been a little quick to leave the pocket. So I think there are throws he does leave on the field. There's no way to gauge within the context of what you're asking when he runs outside the pocket and throws the touchdown to Zacchaeus in the second half. That's a second reaction movement play. That's a phenomenal play by both players. You know, it's just a high-level play by Hurts, a ridiculously good throw. There was not a lot of room there. And Zacchaeus, who's not a big guy, going up and getting it. You know, I don't know how you quantify that in the context of, well, gee, their offense is now better in the second half. I will say this. Their first touchdown drive of the second half, and I'm not going to sit here and recite plays, but their first touchdown drive of the second half that began with a DeAndre Swift 36-yard run was as brilliantly called as a drive can be. And again, I'm not going to go through each and every play, and people can take a look at it if they want, but the way the plays worked off one another.
I was going to say, was that an example of that sequential thinking we were talking about?
Yeah, exactly. And the way that, you know, the way that they were able to do that and get the defensive reaction that they likely anticipated. But I thought that was just brilliantly put together. It ended, of course, with a 3-yard touchdown to A.J. Brown. But, you know, that to me, that drive was a really great example of brilliant play calling and execution. And, you know, but other plays are just individual plays. And and sometimes those happen, too.
Yeah. Matchup I'm looking forward to most, not really, you know, breaking news here, San Francisco's defensive line, the front seven, really, front six against
the front six, which is arguably the best in football.
Yeah, against Eagles offensive line. And speaking of first ballot Hall of Famers, Greg, the last few weeks I've just been like fixated on Jason Kelsey. I think he might be playing the best football of his career.
Yeah, he's the first ballot Hall of Famer. And he is
no question.
He is unbelievable. You know, I got asked the other day, and I know you're a historian as well. I got asked the other day, you know, are there centers that he reminds me of? And two, you know, I got asked this out of the blue. So it's not as if somebody said, I'm going to ask you that question. And the two guys who immediately came to my mind, because they were both highly athletic as well, were Kevin Mowai and Dermonte Dawson. And they're both Hall of Famers as well. Because I can picture both guys getting outside and doing the kinds of things that Jason Kelsey does.
I think I saw Mowai more than Dawson for some reason. And I can absolutely see that one.
Yeah. But, I mean, Kelsey's just a great, great player. And, by the way, he allows them to do a number of things that they do. You know, I mentioned that 36-yard run by Swift. You know, the Bills, and just to get into the weeds a little, maybe you'll get have an opportunity to show the run. The Eagles were in a 3-by-1. Actually, it was 4-by-1. But, I mean, they were strong to the right side of the formation. The Bills are an over front, which means that their line is shifted to the strength of the offense. So the 3 technique is to the strength of the offense, and the 1 technique is in the gap to the weak side. So they knew that's what the Bills were. So they called an outside zone run. That's what the Swift play was. But because of the front, they blocked it a little differently. They had Dickerson, the left guard, blocked down on the 1 technique, and Kelsey fold around him to work up to the second level. Okay. It's still outside zone. They just block it. The front dictates how you block it. Mm-hmm. And you just watch Kelsey move, and it's just – it's unbelievable, you know, for a guy, you know, because he's not tall. You know, it's not like he's a – you know, you watch some great athletes move. Like when you watch Trent Williams move, it's ridiculous, but he's also tall. So it just looks different. Kelsey's not 6'4 or 6'5". So, you know, but the way he moves is absolutely remarkable.
Yeah. Well, Trent Williams is an aircraft carrier who moves like a speedboat. You don't get a lot of those guys.
Yeah. You know, I'm not an offensive line guru like our, you know, Brandon Thorne or Duke Mannyweather. Those guys right. know it. Like, I mean, they teach me. But I'd be hard pressed to find two better left tackles in this league than Trent Williams and Laramie Tunsil. I've been watching a ton of Texans, as I'm sure you have, because, you know, I want to watch Stroud every week. And Tunsil is so, so good as well.
Yep. Well, we're going to get into Tunsil and Jacksonville's defense in a minute, because that's interesting. So, especially since they traded for Chase, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, Niners have shown all kinds of weird, you know, they have the overload with Warner as the three, we know that, but they've had multiple plays, and they're really kind of starting to spam this, in which Young and Nick Bosa are inside, and Javon Hargrave and Eric Armstead, the tackles, are aligned outside, and they're doing these in some different, you know, they're messing with the spacing and really gacking at the protections. So, I don't know if Lane Johnson will play with that groin injury.
Yeah, we don't know that.
Yeah, how did Jack Driscoll do? Because I didn't get
to show. He struggles. He struggles in one-on-one protection, and that could be an issue in this game if he plays. The Niners do that on occasion. The thing they do far more of, Doug, is the loaded front, where they have three defensive linemen to one side of the center, and they often mug up Fred Warner opposite the load, and that eats up the guard to that side, and they love bringing Bosa from the load side on long stunts into the A-gap. And if that backside guard that Warner kind of controls is not available to help, that is really, really difficult to deal with.
Over. So I saw your NFL matchup compadre, Darius Butler, breaking this play down on the Pat McAfee show. So I'm kind of wondering if it'd be a matchup. The Brock Purdy touchdown to Brandon Ayuk against the Seahawks. I feel like I could talk about this play for 20 minutes.
Oh, you mean the 28 or 29 yarder?
Yeah. The touchdown.
I mean, that. See, if I could just, you know.
Good God. There's so many things.
Here's the way a lot of people think about the quarterback position. They think that the guys who run around make wow plays. And they do. There's no question. You know, that's why there's the talk, you know, about Caleb Williams. And that's, you know, what we always talk about with Mahomes, the Josh Allens, the guys who, the Lamars, the guys who run around and make plays. And that's not a negative. I don't want people to think I'm saying it's a negative. But they don't quite see anticipation throws as wow throws. When you're watching on TV, you don't see that. You just see, well, that's a really good throw, and it doesn't seem like anything special. It just seems like, well, that's what quarterbacks do. They drop back, they throw from the pocket, and they make some good throws. But
no.
But I was watching that, you know, with my clicker, and you know what I love to do a lot is to freeze it right when a quarterback starts to separate his hands, because that's when you can really see timing and anticipation. And Ayuk hadn't even begun his break yet. And we're not talking about a 6-yard ball. You know, we're talking about a ball down the field.
24 air yards.
Right. So, and the other thing too is he put it right on his hands. I work with two guys who played quarterback, you know, on the matchup show. And, you know, they tell me, because obviously I didn't play quarterback, but I've been doing this a long time and we're taught by really smart people. To be able to throw it before a guy makes his break and put it right on his hands.
Boom. Yeah.
I mean, Kurt Warner was a master at that in the Rams offense with Mike Martz offense, you know, throwing those dig balls that, you know, way before Isaac Bruce or Torrey Holt made their break. And he'll tell you that. He said that's how he could build houses because he could throw that pass, you know. But to me, and maybe I'm a quarterback purist, and I'm sure people on Twitter will tell me I'm a dinosaur, and I don't, you know, I'm not up with the present day game and all that stuff. But to me, that's a wow. It's a different kind of wow than watching Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, but it's still a wow.
There were several wows, and this is the way I saw it. It looked to me here like his progression was Juszczyk to the left flat out of motion, then Kittle on the over route, and then Ayuk on what I don't know what that route was, like a deep Texas route, like an angle, where he worked Devin Witherspoon on that angle. Purdy had Quandre Diggs and Bobby Wagner playing games over the middle with exchanging looks. So this was also an instance where it looked like too high, and then it went to cover three. Just so much to work through that short amount of time, and the throw to Ayuk – was a banger in my notes. He had to short hop it also because of pressure. He had pressure coming here and pressure here. So it was like that Stroud thing we talk about where he doesn't need to stride to make those bang on throws. But he hit Ayuk in stride 24 yards downfield as Witherspoon and Love were converging. Ultimately,
it was not a difficult concept. It was mini boot action, okay? Mini boot left to the boundary.
He was floating that way.
Yeah, the Seahawks, they went late rotation from split safety to cover three. Mm-hmm. So it was a double post concept to the field. So he boots to the boundary, and it was a double post concept to the field with Kittle the inside post and Ayuk the outside post. Because of Kittle, it becomes one-on-one for Ayuk on the outside. So he kind of knew that. I mean, mm-hmm. It probably wasn't a difficult read in a strict sense. It's just a really difficult throw. Those are two different things.
Well, yeah, I get that. But how many guys do you see with him? He's basically been a starter for a year. He's going 1, 2, 3.
Well, he's got that. He has two things that are innate to him, which has allowed him to become Brock Purdy in the NFL. One is he's an incredibly quick processor of information. I can't tell you how many plays of late rotation I see, disguise and late rotation, where in an instant he knows exactly what just changed, and the primary read before the rotation is no longer the primary, and now he knows exactly what the new primary is. And don't forget, this all happens in less than a second, and he sees that instantaneously. So he's an incredibly quick processor. And the other thing is this innate natural feel for timing and anticipation. Those two things are innate to him, and it's one reason he's been able to come in and play at a high level quickly.
And if that was a post by Ayuk, it looked like an altered post because Witherspoon.
Yeah, it wasn't. He took it inside a little more.
That's why it was more of an angle. So was some disruption on his route.
Right, probably because of the coverage, you know. Yeah. But no, that was big time throw. But it was basically a double post concept. I mean, you're working to create. You know, it all depends on what they went to cover three, and he saw that, and then he knew he could throw it to Ayuk.
Right. But you have to go from left to right all the way across.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it's easy.
Yeah. Because we see a lot of guys who cannot do it.
No. And some guys might not even have seen that as a viable throw.
Yeah, exactly. Or you throw it you probably throw it to Kittle and just hope he'd be George Kittle. Chiefs at Packers. The Detroit Lions played 23 snaps of man coverage against Jordan Love on Thanksgiving. They played 149 snaps of man coverage all season up to that point. Jordan Love against man coverage this season has thrown 8 touchdowns. Only Josh Allen has more with 9, 1 interception, and a passer rating of 91.6. The Chiefs are really good in man. Against the Lions, though, I'm sure you saw this. Love had that 37-yard. I'm like you. I never know whether it's an option or an RPO. It looked like an RPO where Alex Anzalone crashed in man, and he just went zoop for 37 yards. So when the Chiefs are, you know, Spags is doing all that cute, like, here's my slot blitzer and here's Mike Dana dropping, they got to watch out for the run game, too.
Well, that was at the end of the game. You're talking about the 37-yard run?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was at the end of the game when you know, they were just trying to squeeze everybody inside, figuring they were going to get a handoff.
Right.
But I think Love has really he's progressed nicely. I think he'll always be the kind of quarterback. I think that he might throw a couple of bad picks that you scratch your head, but I think that he's clearly progressed. It's his first year as a starter. You got to remember, he's playing with 2 second-year receivers and 3 first-year receivers as well. And he's a first-year starting quarterback. And by the way, an offensive line in which the 2 tackles are not the 2 tackles that they expected to start the year with. They have Zach Tom at right tackle, and they've been playing predominantly Rashid Walker at left tackle, although Neiman has played a little bit as well, and he's been there. But again, he's not a true starting NFL left tackle. So, you know, his development has really, you know, we live in a world where people want it to happen like that. And if it doesn't happen like that, people think he's no good. You know, you'd have to expect there to be incremental improvement and peaks and valleys and ups and downs. And that's the way his season has been. But I think for the most part, he's improved and progressed very nicely. He's a decisive thrower. This is not an X and O point, Doug, but I think you would agree. I think he looks like an NFL quarterback when you watch his tape. I mean, you don't watch him and go, oh, boy, this guy's tough to watch. No. This guy looks like an NFL quarterback.
He's not struggling in the increments. One thing, I was reading the transcripts and kind of watching plays, and this lined up for me. The first of his three touchdowns against the Lions, 12-21 left in the first quarter. 10-yarder to Jaden Reed from the outside left slot and trips with Christian Watson to the left inside slot. And that's where the geometry got interesting. Love said after the game, we messed that up. Christian wasn't supposed to be right where he was at. He was supposed to run a slant.
You're talking about that touchdown to Reed?
Yeah, I don't know if it's supposed to be like a Dino, a double
slant. Yes. I think Watson screwed that up.
He did. No, yeah. Look, Love said after the game, but he didn't say he screwed it up. The point is, Watson engaged Kirby Joseph, ran outside from there. Reed had to navigate all that stuff in the middle, which he did quite nicely. Love had to read that from the outside, like, what the hell's going on now? Pinpoint throw was excellent, and you could see Watson put his hands on his head right after the play, like, oops. And
Love ran the wrong route because he was almost right in the passing lane.
Right. So, yeah, he screwed up the whole thing, and Love was just like calm, like, I can still do this. I can still make this throw. Again, another guy who's started for a year, and you see these sort of it's not just what you see on the field. It's, you know, you read stuff and you listen to people, and these mental, the acuity development comes out, and that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I still think he needs to work a little bit on his mechanics. He's a little loose.
Yeah.
A little loose with his lower body. Sometimes he's loose with the ball. But, you know, those are things you can work on. But for the most part, I think he's improving incrementally. There'll still be some downs. You know, I don't want people to think, hearing me talk, that, oh, man, if he has a bad game this week, and you said he's great. That's not what I'm saying. I think that he has what it takes to be a quality starter, but there'll still be some ups and downs in his game.
I think, yeah, his feet don't always match his, you know, the way I put it with some quarterbacks, his upper and lower body seem to be having an argument at times.
Sometimes.
He'll get that together. Let's see. We've gone deep on some things. So I want to move to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who we really haven't talked about at all, 9-3. When we talk about the AFC's best teams right now or the hardest to, like, deal with, hello. So Marcus Spears and Dan Orlovsky did a nice job on ESPN this week of breaking down how the Jaguars disrupt with pick or ricochet stunts and widening the splits with spacing, putting their IDLs over the tackles and four-eye looks with the edges outside. They will also selectively blitz their linebackers, Foyasadi Olokun and Devin Lloyd. And they have a really good sense with Mike Caldwell, their DC, of when to present blitz looks into coverage drops. Josh Allen's two sacks against CJ Stroud. The first one came with Olokun and Lloyd mugging left guard Juice Scruggs. Came a six-man pressure with Olokun dropping and Lloyd occupying Tunsil, while Allen came off the left edge unblocked. At the same time, safety Trey Herndon blitzed from the other side on a delay from slot depth. And the second one, Allen was to Tunsil's outside shoulder. Defensive tackle Angelo Blackman was to Scruggs' outside shoulder. Blackson occupied Scruggs, and then Allen just made a great play, slipping through Tunsil and Scruggs and chasing Stroud down. So this is a defense that can get after the quarterback in multiple ways. Stroud had pressure on 28 of his 46 dropbacks in that game. He was never comfortable.
No, he was never comfortable in that game. This was the first game, you know, where he was not comfortable. I thought they really did a good job in the secondary as well, mixing and matching coverages. They selectively blitz. They're not necessarily high-percentage blitz. They selectively blitz. But I thought they did a good job on the back end. It took away Stroud's first and second reads. He had to move more than in any game this season. I didn't get the sense he truly ever got in rhythm in this game.
Because it was different kinds of pressure, and that can really mess up a quarterback even more. It's not like four-man fronts and your offensive line is getting beat. It's like, oh, now he's over here. Oh, crap. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I will say this. I mean, you know, in watching a lot of tape, and I'm just being honest, I don't think it's stuff that no one's ever seen before. No. You know, it's when you do it, it's who's doing it. But it's not, wow, I never saw that pressure before.
Oh, no, it's not that. It's not like I've never seen it before. It's like, okay, now I have to adjust to this and I have to adjust to this. And it's not, you know, if my guys aren't picking those different things up, it becomes more.
Yeah, there were too many free rushers this week at Stroud, and that, which is not on Stroud, that's on the protection. And there were some that came on four-man zone exchange concepts, which are inexcusable. So I put that more on the Texans than I do on the Jaguars doing anything special because it's a four-man rush. It's just a zone exchange, you know, you can't let a free rusher go on those on a four-man rush.
Well, Allen's first sack that I just talked about, he came in. I mean, no one was there.
No one blocked him. And nope. he's an edge player and one of the better pass rushers in the league.
I think I've heard that he's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, but they're, you know, it probably would surprise a lot of people that they're the second or third best third down defense in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I think they do that with a mix of pressure and coverage. One player I really like on their defense, and I've liked him for a couple of years, and I think he's one of those guys that I think is multidimensional in what he gives you, and that's the safety, Rashawn Jenkins. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really good player.
Yep.
He's long. He's athletic. He can play on the back end. He's really good in the box. He's got pretty good range. I think he's just one of those guys no one talks about, but I think he's really important to what they do.
I remember when they got him from the Chargers a few years ago, and I watched his take because, you know, what I do is partially – this guy signs as a free agent, or this guy gets traded, you have to, you know, grade the trade or whatever. So I watch his tape, and I'm like, man, this guy, he's interesting. So
I watched him coming out of the U, and I really liked him. And, you know, a lot of people, the draft gurus said, oh, no, you know, he's not nothing special. You know, I love when I hear people say, well, there's nothing special. There's no wow factor. What does that even mean? How many wow factor? How many transcendent players are there that have a wow factor? I mean – you know, there's very few of those guys. There's a lot of guys in this league who are really good players, or let's put it this way, really important to teams in their schemes that are not going to be Hall of Famers, but they're just good players. You know, there's more of those guys than, oh, my God, that guy's a wow. You know,
let's put it this way, Greg. If you're the Carolina Panthers right now and you can choose between one wow offensive player and three really good offensive players, which ones would you take?
Three.
Or yeah, as many
but
as
I mean, possible. You know, so, you know, Jenkins is just a really good player. Yes. And the way they use him, you know, it makes that better because, you know, he's got length and he's got movement. He's a good player. You know, so and you could, you know, and Aluakon, he's a really good player, too. Yep. So, you know, they have a bunch of those guys.
Very underrated in Atlanta, and he's brought that all over.
I'll tell you, the other guy that shows up every time I watch their tape is Robertson Harris, number 95.
Yes, thank you.
He's another one of those guys. He's just a really nice player, you know? I mean, you need those guys.
Yeah. Real quick before we bail out of here and you go narrate NFL matchup, I wanted to mention Jacksonville's offense. It's fun. A lot of motions at the snap, switch releases to get guys open. Lawrence is delivering the ball in time and on rhythm. He's taking care of that stride issue you discussed with Doug Peterson worked on him, but they're scheming guys open nicely. The 47-yard completion to Christian Kirk with 10 seconds left in the first half against the Texans. Mesh underneath and Kirk running it over against Tavier Thomas. This is a great way to beat the Texans' two-eye safety look that flipped to deep cover three because Kirk took Jalen Petrie to his side, and Ridley took DeAndre Houston Carson up the fade route to the other side. I just like the way in which Doug Peterson and Press Taylor are setting things up for all kinds of, I don't want to say explosive plays in high air yard content, but just explosive plays from different things, and it can be short, intermediate, and long. It's a multidimensional offense.
Yeah, on that play, the Texans kind of, they went cover one robber. Boundary safety, Petrie was the robber, and Kirk just ran the deep over versus the slot corner and just ran away from him.
Yeah.
You know, and then they started their second, third quarter possession with the Ridley 45-yard play, which is, you know, just kind of a basic – it's a shot play concept. It's conventional play action, meaning the quarterback's under center, and it was a post-cross combination. Ridley ran the deep crosser. I think their pass offense is good. They're going to have to – get more out of their run game. They're near the bottom of the league running the ball, and it's not been very good.
Yeah, and that's an adjustment they can make. Well, Greg, as always, awesome stuff. A lot of stuff to look forward. A lot of things to look forward to.
Yeah, we went through a lot of stuff today, Doug.
Yeah, I feel like I could have done 10 more things. That's always the way it is. As always, super, super work, Mr. Purcell, and we'll be talking more X's and O's next week.
Thanks, Doug.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.